against the advice of all the capital's revolutionary organizations, the women working in several Petrograd textile factories went on strike. As news of the strike traveled, more women walked out of their jobs. Within hours, over 100,000 people, men and women, were protesting in the streets. Hungry women workers marched down to the parliament. Women workers and housewives, fed up with breadlines, spontaneously joined a rally that the socialists had planned for International Women's Day. Coursing down Nevsky Prospekt, the city's main artery, they carried banners that said, "If a woman is a slave, there will be no freedom. Long live equal rights for women." As more workers joined the strikes in the following days, soldiers were ordered to put down the protests by force. Instead, they mutinied. Within a week, Tsar Nicholas II had abdicated the throne and a provisional government was installed. If future historians look for the group that began the Russian Revolution, let them not create any involved theory, wrote one male revolutionary in his diary of what he saw in Petrograd during those turbulent days. The Russian Revolution was begun by hungry women and children demanding bread and herring. Leon Trotsky, who in a few months would mobilize the troops that helped the Bolsheviks seize power, wrote that Petrograd's women had marched on the cordons of soldiers more bravely than the men, grabbed the soldiers' rifles, and asked, almost commanded, "Drop your guns and join us." It wasn't exactly a surprise that women were so instrumental in the success of the February Revolution. In Russia's increasingly radicalized industrial labor force, women made up 40% of the workers. Russia also had the highest number of female radicals of any country in Europe, some 18,000 anarchists, socialists, and communist revolutionaries ready to fight. By the turn of the 20th century, there were so many female political prisoners in the Russian capital alone that the government had to build a new prison just to hold them. While the suffragettes or militants in the West smashed windows, caned politicians, and provoked arrest, wrote historian Richard Stites, Russian revolutionary women fired at generals, plotted uprisings, and dangled from gallows. As soon as Alexandra Kollontai got word that the provisional government had amnestied all political exiles, she rushed home from Norway to Petrograd, arriving on April 9, 1917. The monarchy had fallen, and suddenly history was here, and she longed to mold it, to bring about the socialist revolution she had dreamt of for 20 years. Soon, Kollontai, once an opponent of the Bolsheviks, had an unexpected ally. A week after she set foot in the capital, an armored train pulled into Petrograd's Finland station. On board was the famous Bolshevik, Vladimir Lenin. Almost immediately, Lenin began demanding that Bolsheviks seize power and refuse to work with any of the other anti-Tsarist parties. The Bolsheviks had always wanted to telescope the revolution described by their prophet Karl Marx. The idea was to rush Russia from its current feudal stage of development right to the socialist phase, essentially skipping over the bourgeois industrial period that Marx saw as necessary for revolution. It set them apart from the Mensheviks, the socialist gradualists. But when Lenin sought to actually make that leap, the Bolsheviks balked. They feared that if they moved too fast, their movement would be crushed. No one supported Lenin's proposals, except Kollontai. So ferocious was her proselytization of Lenin's so-called April Theses that foreign newspapers dubbed the striking 45-year-old the Valkyrie of the Revolution. It was a strange molting that had transformed Kollontai from a child of privilege into a Marxist revolutionary. Born Alexandra Domontovich in St. Petersburg in 1872 into a wealthy aristocratic family, she rebelled early, mostly against a mother that wouldn't let her take university classes or marry the man she wanted, a poor distant cousin named Vladimir Kollontai. Alexandra did both anyway. Marriage initially seemed like a way to free herself from her mother's control and pursue her true desire, which was to study Marxist and populist philosophy. The plan worked at first. Her parents sent her and Vladimir enough money to hire a maid, but Alexandra's home life became much more complicated when, at the age of 22, she gave birth to her son. Being a wife and a mother, she soon realized, was extremely time-consuming.